Welcome back to episode 135 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here at Chess Journeys, we love to explore the glories of ratings gain, but we also dive into the realities, the plateaus, and sometimes even below that, the pits of despair. If you want to support the show, you go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank our queen-level supporters, Mike Rebeshi, Blundergoat, Tim Everett, Scott D4B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donna Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, and king-level supporter Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, you can fill out the Google form in the show notes below. You can message me on Twitter. Both are great places to go. And if you're interested in Noel Studer's Next Level Training Program, there's a code in the show notes. It will help you. It'll help me. We all win. And today, I'm bringing in our guest, Andrew. He's a writer, a spouse, a parent, and a dedicated chess improver. And I met him in person at the North American Open. Andrew, welcome to the show. And have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
Hey, Kevin. Thank you for having me. I have not played any chess today. I'm more of an evening chess guy. So I knew that that question was coming in. I had the best of intentions of banging out one blitz game this morning just so I could, because the correct answer to that question is yes. But unfortunately, my answer is no. I did go over two rapid games that I played last night. So I kind of did the dojo improved blunder game method where you kind of go through move by move without the engine to see like who hung a tactic. Okay. So I did that with two games that I won last night. So,
okay, excellent. So, do you have a process that's like play games in the evening, sleep on them, and then look at them in the mornings, or did that just happen to work out that way today?
It happened to work out that way because I was tired last night. And usually what I'll do is I'll play the game and then immediately like go back and replay the game be like, what did I miss? What did my opponent miss? So
you play games when you're tired. You don't do the whole baby your rating thing and go, oh, I'm too tired to play rapid tonight. I can't.
I baby my rating, but not in that particular way you're describing. And the other thing is I usually play my regular over the board games are evening games. I play like a weeknight, weekly tournament. So that's why I figure like I'm usually playing chess in the evening. So I might as well get used to it.
Yeah. What a great idea to practice the actual skill you're going to have to do, right? They talk about this all the time. Like if you're going to be in a noisy test taking environment, then you should study in a noisy environment, not in a silent environment, and then be shocked when it's a noisy one.
Like, yeah. If you're drunk, when you study for the test, you should drink before you take the exam.
Right? Yeah, I guess.
I'm sure your students do that all the time.
I hope my high school students do not. I played two games this morning. I got to say, I'm not feeling well. And I was like, let's see. It's always a good test. How's the brain doing? Man, my first game I played amazing. I had like a 97% accuracy and just played this great game. And then my second game, my opponent hung a tactic on like move four. Not even a tactic, just like hung a piece and then resigned. And I was like, okay, two games with 97% accuracies. I'm basically a chess god again, Andrew.
What was your time control this morning?
I was playing 3-2.
Okay, yeah. So you're the god of 3-2.
Apparently, for now.
And then 3.5 minutes later, you're back to being Kevin.
Yeah, it's the next game. I'll hang something. It'll be terrible. Okay. Well, let's start with your story as a young child. Did you play at all when you were a little kid? Did you play some scholastic chess, perhaps?
I hesitate to call it scholastic chess. I played chess in school. So I assume, I don't always remember these things very clearly, but I assume I learned the moves from my dad. But he was I don't think he was a chess player. In fact, I'm pretty sure we'll get to a story about my dad's chess prowess a little later when I realized, you probably just like read the instruction book along with your own learning and taught me. And then, so yeah. I remember playing I grew up in kind of a small town in Western Canada. At our public elementary school, I remember there being chess, and playing other kids. I think the extent of scholastic chess was like the school provided, boards and pieces and a set time for us to play. But my memory of it is that we kind of taught each other. in that way where it's like a new kid comes to chess and everyone's like, oh, he doesn't know the scholar's mate.
Right.
We call it the four move checkmate, right? And so it's like, that's kind of, that was kind of the rite of passage. And I remember playing some other kids in my grade. I remember, I think that there were some tournaments. I don't think they were inter-school. I think it was just against other kids in our school. And I remember there were, so I was one of these kids who I was the smartest kid in my grade and I knew it.
Ooh.
And I was not the best chess player.
Oh, that
so
must
the
hurt.
Kids, yeah, the kids that were beating me at chess, I was like, I don't understand. I'm smarter than that kid. Why can he beat me at chess? And that, I think that really turned me off of chess. At that age. So I did not play beyond elementary school. And I didn't learn any theory, right, or anything. I just learn or strategy, or, you know, I didn't have any instruction. I just was what other 9-year-olds were teaching me.
Yeah, it is a really funny thing with chess, right? That, like, I think we so often equate chess and intelligence, like, as a society, when really it's a board game like any other board game, meaning that, like, practice is going to be a paramount, right? Intelligence factors in, of course, but, like, if the smartest person in the world has never played chess against someone who's played chess every day for years, the chess player is probably going to win.
And chess players are pretty open about talking about that, but 9-year-old me had not heard that. And so 9-year-old me was like, you know, F this game. Like, this is clearly not a true measure of intelligence the way
I cannot
it was sold to me.
Lose to the kid who eats paint. Like, I just can't. I just can't do it. Can't do it. I can understand that. So, any regrets? Like, what if you had stuck with chess? Would you be the world champion today?
I probably would. But it sounds like, based on the last couple world champions, it sounds like it's not the greatest gig being the world champion. So I think actually I did okay.
Okay, so you're confident you would have been world champion, but you made the right choice not becoming world champion.
I think so, yeah. You're correct.
All right.
I
agree. That's cool. That's good when you can be happy with the life choices you've made.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. So what made you think, well, you know, I'm still smarter than these people. I'm going to be worse than them, but I'm going to play chess anyway. Or did you come back thinking like, no, now that I'm even smarter, I'm going to crush everybody?
I came back thinking like with a false memory that I had been good at chess or that I had known something about chess.
Oh, no.
So there was a little bit, and there was a period in college where we kind of played like drunk by the pool chess on spring break. So I was like, okay, I'm kind of a chess player. Like, I know how the pieces move.
Yeah.
I watched the Queen's Gambit in 2020, did not come back to chess, enjoyed it, did not come back to chess.
Okay.
What brought me back to chess, just over a year ago. So 6 months before the, pandemic, my, wife and I had a baby.
Okay.
And so, by the time she was like in her threes, she started getting interested in Lego. And Lego is very cool now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Lego is better than when we were kids. And so we were like, oh, she's putting together these Legos. And so, you know, the cooler Legos are designed for like older kids than three. And so we kept getting her cooler and cooler sets. And she would just look at the instruction book where it kind of shows like how you rotate this three-dimensional piece. And at first we were like, let me help you with this. And she was just like, no, I know where the pieces go. And so we got up to like 18 plus Lego, and she's just doing it. And so we were like, oh, this is a way that her brain works. And so immediately what you do is like, what else do you give a kid who's like good at Lego? And obviously based on Magnus's, you know, childhood backstory of like, that's kind of how his parents decided to get him into chess. We're like, oh, chess. Christmas, 2022, my wife, who had never played chess before, was like, let's buy a chess set. I think she had started looking into it, and she had read this story, I don't know if it's apocryphal, about the Polgar sisters and how there was always a board set up because, you know, their dad had plans for them, right?
He did not
reveal those plans. He just had a board set up in the house.
Right.
And the girls would be like, you know, what is this? And he's like, it's chess. And they're like, well, what is chess? And he's like, well, when you're ready for it.
Yeah.
But it was always left out in the house in a prominent position so they could see it and get themselves interested instead of him being like, here's chess, we're going to play it.
Right.
He was just like kind of dangled the carrot. So we bought a nice House of Staunton set that arrived for Christmas.
Nice.
And yeah, that was the start. And my wife actually started playing before I did.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
And she was like, so she was like, she got some books from the library. She signed up for a class at the Mechanics Institute, which is the chess club in San Francisco. A bit like a basic, like show up on Wednesday nights and we'll teach you how the pieces move
Oh,
for
that's cool.
adults. And she was kind of getting into it. And I was like, okay, we have this chess set. Like, I mean, if my friends come over, I might play. Then I was like, oh, what are you doing on your phone? She's like, oh, I'm looking at chess. There's two, you can play on, you can play people on the internet. And she was like, there's these two sites, try Lee Chess first. Like that's the kind of free open source French one. And so I downloaded that and I started messing around with it.
Interesting. Okay. So it starts with like wanting to intrigue your child. Your wife becomes intrigued. Now you've become intrigued. Question: did your child become intrigued, or she's like, you guys were the suckers, the Polgars got you?
No, she was quickly entranced by these pieces. She's the precocious, curious kid, and so she was into it, and I was like, well, I'm gonna have to like pick up my game so I actually know what the right things to tell you. So
So you guys are now the Polgar sisters. Who's who?
yeah, I guess all three of us are sisters, and our dad is just like the House of Staunton Chess Company.
Exactly. That's
Yeah.
great.
And so the books started showing up, and so the first one I think I read was Bobby Fischer Teaches Chess, because it was little and I could hold it in bed and like just like go through it, and it's teaching basic checkmates, and it was cool, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I never learned any of this stuff when I thought I was learning chess. My memory of chess doesn't include any of this stuff. So I read that, cranked through that book pretty quickly. There was also like other books that started showing up. And this is a thing of like new chess people. You kind of get the thing that people do with all kinds of pursuits where you're like, you go on the internet and you're like, what books are good for learning chess? But the problem is that you don't realize, and even to like a fairly high level of involvement, you don't realize that like different chess books are for people of different levels. So all of a sudden, like on my wife's bedside table, there's Reassess Your Chess, and like my system shows up, and I was like paging through my system, and I was like, I don't really get what this Nimcevich guy is talking about, but
Did you get Deveretsky's Endgame manual?
I think that one was on hold. I still have not tackled that one.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so that's pretty cool. So you don't even have to buy chess books. They're just showing up because your wife's into chess.
Yeah, and she's really good at like placing holds at the library, because we have
Oh,
a
these are
because
all
we
library
they're
books.
all
That's even
library books, and
better.
we have a three. So yeah, so it's no there's no like crack 'em and stack 'em. It's like
Oh, that's
they
awesome.
show up, and we have a 3-year-old, so we're going to the library to pick up books anyways. So yeah, consult you, those of you who are into chess books, like your public library is your friend.
Okay, excellent. I'm going to have to look into this. Okay, so you've started going through some books. You went through Fisher's book. What draws you to books? Is it just the fact that they start showing up, or do you feel like your sort of academic background leads you to thinking like books is the ultimate
Yeah,
place for
I
learning?
mean, I'm a reader, I'm a writer, and I also live in San Francisco, right? So that's the other thing, is like all of my friends make the stuff on your phone that you're addicted to. So it's kind of like, if you grew up in like Richmond, Virginia in the 1980s, and people are like, why don't you smoke cigarettes? It's like, no, I kind of know how the sausage is made. So I'm very skeptical of like chess on my phone, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, the pretty cool. Like Lee Chess is amazing, right? It's like, so,
That's cool. Okay, so
but yeah, books.
you're going with books. What are your favorites so far? So it sounds like Bobby Fischer Teaches Chess was a good one. What
It
about
was, yeah.
Reassess Your Chess? Did you use that one at all?
I did never crack that one. I
That's a
did.
tough one.
I did find myself getting like a ways into my system and being like, I think I need to like have a plan here, because like I'm not
Uh-oh.
doing this in the right way. So I did actually get, there was a book that we bought that was my kind of like gateway book, and it's a book, it's called The Mammoth Book of Chess. I think it's Graham Burgess. He's like a British FM,
Yeah.
maybe he wrote it. And it's great. It's just a compendium. It's like everything you need to know about chess.
Okay.
Some chess history, some chess approaches, tactics, middle game plans, strategy, end games, and openings. And I was immediately drawn to the chapter on openings.
Oh no.
No, it's fine. Nobody regrets that, do they?
Okay. So how deep did you go with your initial opening study? Did you just kind of realize like I should do a little, or did you do one of these, I'm going to memorize the first 18 moves of these openings? What?
Yeah, closer to the latter than the former. It was just, and like, I don't really regret it. You know, my chess might have progressed more quickly if I had been doing tactics right away and not openings. I did have a kind of not a great sense of like how a chess game was won. So I was like, oh man, if I can get to move 8 and Stockfish says I'm like plus 0.8, like then I just like simplify and win.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so what I did was I started kind of trying to figure these openings out, and I kind of picked two, like a white one and a black one against e4. And I had these little field notes notebooks. They're like, a little bit bigger than a cell phone, and and so I started like writing, like handwriting my kind of like going
Nice.
through and trying to figure these things out and keeping like almost like a little diary of like how openings worked.
Okay, that sounds like a very interactive way to do it. Like a
Yeah.
lot
Yeah.
better.
So I didn't do any, like I didn't do chess. Well, I wasn't memorizing moves, but I was trying to figure out this concept of like,
Okay.
oh, this is interesting. Like we know the best, we know the best places to put your pieces if you want to play in this direction. So
That's cool.
do you want to
That sounds.
guess what openings I chose?
Let me see. White, I'm gonna guess e4.
Yeah.
Okay. Black, I'm gonna guess you are like, I'm an attacking player. I'm gonna play the King's Indian.
I did learn the King's Indian against d4 later on as
Oh,
more of
right. I'm
just like
sorry. It's
a
against e4, right? No one plays d4. Let me see. The Sicilian.
The Sicilian seems very scary.
Okay.
And hearing from kind of people on the internet, who are content creators who make these charts of like which op openings are solid.
Oh, then you're playing the Caro Kann.
I was playing the Caro-Kann. Yeah. And it has a cool name, and C6 is kind of like a cool, it's kind of like a cool move, right? Where it's like it feels like, that in the French, it's like I'm gonna only move my pawn a little bit and you're gonna be a little bit freaked out.
When I play that against my high school students, they're like, "What? That's not even a move." And I'm like, "Well, it is. It's a little weird." And they're like, "I don't understand what you're doing." And they don't even like they stop and stare at the board for a while. Like they're so mystified. They don't even know what to do next.
Yeah, it's like you're baiting them into some kind of trap, which you kind of are.
Exactly. I'm like, I just play d5, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Or d4, sorry.
And so that was my black opening, and I got, and that one's like, not too deeply theoretical. I mean, for if when you're just starting. But of course for white, I was like, oh, what sounds cool for white? The Ruy Lopez, that has a cool name. It's really old. Bishop B5 is like a cool move. That one probably caused more harm than good, getting deep into the Ruy Lopez with no chess knowledge. So.
Yeah, Roy Lopez theory can be tough. I still remember trying to explain to somebody how come it wasn't a bad opening if you have to move your bishop like four times in the opening.
Yeah.
I was like, and at first I couldn't explain it, and I was like, yeah, this is how I know I don't know this opening well
Yeah,
enough.
I
I was
feel the
like, just
same way.
trust me, it's good, it's theory.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you stick with the Roy Lopez for a while, or did you kind of switch pretty quickly?
Yeah, I stuck with that one longer than I stuck with the Caro-Kann, but I have switched both of my kind of main e4
Ooh, and
openings
what caused you
over
to
time.
switch?
Well, just over time. I think a couple things. One, both of those openings are fairly, I would say now my understanding of them is fairly positional openings,
okay.
which I don't think was the kind of stuff that I was progressing on when I started to learn a little bit more about chess. And the other thing is that I found, especially, I mean, with both of those openings, but especially the Caro-Kann, playing quicker games online, I would develop these solid positions. And I don't play very quickly, so I develop these solid positions. I'd be down on the clock, and yep. I wouldn't have a plan. So I kind of like lost a lot of Caro-Kann games just because I was like, I have a good position, and now I don't know what to do, and now I'm running out of time, and so that's what kind of caused me to play something a little bit more open and tactical.
Yeah, and that's kind of how the Caro-Kann works, right? Like when you look at books, they'll be like, okay, they show you like the plans and stuff for the first, you know, whatever into the middle game. And then they're like, and now you're solid and you just play chess.
Yeah. And you can trade down into this winning end game. And I'm like, right. no end games are winning for me.
Right. You're like, two problems. One, I don't know how to play positionally after this. And two, yeah. if I trade to an end game, it is a losing end game because I don't know end games.
Yeah. And you have to be able to play with less space, which is not easy, yeah. right? It's like, where do I put it? Like, you know, that's how I found I was losing a lot of games where I was like, I'm just cramped and like yeah. just not having a good time. So
one of the things I really like about openings like that is it teaches you about pawn breaks, right? Like you really have to understand the power of a pawn break, or like you said, you just get squished by the space advantage.
Yeah. So I think I did not. That was one of the last
yeah, it's
basic understandings
concept.
To come. It's like, when do you move your pawns? It did teach me that, you know, in the kind of like the Steinitz version of the Rolepas was my first experience with like slam in d4. As I started to kind of like, you know, learn a little bit more from openings, you know, there's this idea of like, well, you should learn opening principles and don't study openings. But I do feel like I learned opening principles from studying openings.
Yeah.
By asking the question, like, why in all of these different approaches does white want to like slam in d4? It's like, oh, that move like makes sense for me, more sense for me.
So. Yeah. So I'm guessing you switched to the Scotch game.
Yeah, I started playing the Scotch. Actually, the first time I played it over the board was in Las Vegas at the North American Open.
Yeah, I quite want to play that. I remember coming across it. I was looking at some Kasparov games, and he was playing it, and I was
when he dusted it off, and everyone was like, "Wait, you're gonna play the Scotch?
Yeah,
and destroy everyone."
I was like, I didn't even know that was a legit opening. And then once Kasparov was playing, I was like, "Okay, it must be."
Yeah, I really like playing it. I'm only a couple months into playing it, so it's still fresh and exciting. But
yeah,
I just heard fun. Even you know people on your show, people in the chess world, who are adult club players. I heard enough of them being like, I play the Scotch and it's fun.
Yeah, if I ever switch back to E4, I'm going the Scotch.
Yeah, 100%. It's great. It's great. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I even mess with it sometimes in Blitz. I don't even know the theory or anything. I'm just like. Yeah, I'm gonna play the Scotch.
You're just gonna open up the board and pieces will start flying.
Yeah, exactly. We're just gonna have a fun time. And if it's 3-2, then it's fine. Like maybe I'll be all right.
You really don't need to know that much beyond like move 3 is d4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And if black doesn't take on d4, like they've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah. What if they don't take on d4, what is even happening?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so you're playing the Scotch. That makes sense. Let me see then. As black, then, I think you've moved to the Sicilian.
I have, yeah. That's correct. Yeah, that was more of like last summer I started playing that OTB. So I kind of played it online. Both of these openings, I played it online for a month or two. I kind of developed, you know, I had a couple pages in my little handwritten notebook of like how you play these openings. But yeah, I switched to the Sicilian. So one of the books that actually did show up purchased in my house was this book that was called Chess Openings for Black, A Complete Repertoire.
Oh, okay.
And it's from, I want to say it's from like the mid 2000s. but it is, what's his name? Eugene Perelstein, who is an American, I think he's like from Massachusetts. He's like an American GM.
Yeah.
And so it's like the third edition of this book that these other two grandmasters who were his teachers had started. And then basically I think the third edition was like, he kind of rewrote it with new theory. Yeah. And so their recommendation for block was to play C5 and to play the hyper accelerated dragon.
Ooh, the hyper accelerated dragon.
Which also, again, cool name, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
So
you're gonna play an opening, you might as well play one with an awesome name.
Which sounds awesome. Yeah. So I started playing C5, and then against almost anything, the second move is G6, and you're gonna fianchetto out of a bishop.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like you've got some openings you're pretty happy with. Do you feel like they fit more whatever style or whatever your strengths are at this moment?
I think so. Yeah. I think that there was like, there's this notion of like, there's stylistic, there's personality to your opening choice. And I kind of, thought, oh, you know, like everybody describes them as an attacking player, like, but I'm different than most people, so I'm gonna play like the Karakhan, which is not attacking. And but I had no idea like what I actually wanted to play. I was just like being going against the flow. And then I was like, no, I think I understand open positions better. So
okay, so did you jump into like YouTube at all in these early periods to see like Gotham chess?
Yeah, so like when I started, I probably started about a year ago. I actually was looking on my Lee Chess account, and my first game against a human was 1 year ago yesterday.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah, so I did a couple weeks. I did a couple weeks of the classic thing where I only wanted to play bots because I was a little scared of playing against another person.
I know, they're scary.
Yeah, and I played against Stockfish. I played like time control games against Stockfish, which I realized quickly was not a good idea because Stockfish moves instantly, so you don't get to think on the opponent's time at all.
It's and I was very like, unnerving.
I was like, why am I timing out against the computer? Like, this is not useful. Yeah.
It's really good practice for playing against little kids, though.
Yeah, that's true. They are little Stockfishes.
But they do blunder way more often.
Well, it depends on what level of Stockfish you choose. Stockfish 2 is probably pretty accurate in terms of like a new 6-year-old. So
okay, so we got to ask. 1 year ago today, what were those first ratings like?
So it took a while to stabilize. I also noticed I had played like 350 games on Lee Chess. So I was like, oh, I play about on average about a game a day. So I'm not like a huge binger of games. I haven't played like 4,000 games in the past year.
Yeah.
So it took a while to stabilize, and these are Lee Chess ratings where you start at 1500. So over the course of a couple of weeks or maybe 2 months, my sort of static level was like high 11, around 1200, maybe high 1100s. So that was my kind of like initial rating, and that's rapid. That's sort of the main time control that I was comfortable with.
Okay. Were you playing any Blitz or?
I was playing some Blitz too. Yeah. Okay. I have kind of continued to like on and off play some Blitz. I had a friend. So one of my college friends, who was part of the like drunk by the pool spring break chess. When I kind of got back into chess, I, mentioned something on the, on like a group text thread of like, by the way, like, are any of you guys into chess? And one of the guys was like, oh yeah, I'm deep into chess. Like, he's very, I mean, he's pretty good. He's like a 1500 Blitz player on Lee Chess.
Oh, nice.
And he had the attitude of, and he had played like 4,000 games, and every single one of them was 5+0.
Oh boy. Okay.
And he was like, that's the true time control. Like, that's what you play. That's park chess. And that's like real chess.
That's real chess. Okay.
That's real chess. Yeah.
That's really cool. I like this. One of my favorite things about chess is how people can define what real chess is differently.
Yeah.
So for him, real chess is 5-0. For you, real chess is rapid, at least at that point, right?
Yeah.
To me, real chess is like game 90.
Yeah.
So
sitting across from a human with, putting your hands on the pieces.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just so fascinating how that, and it'll evolve too, as you get more into the game, as you get less into the game, depending on where you're at in your life. I could easily see myself 20 years from now being like, real chess is 5-0 in the park. That's what all people play. If you play over the board in a tournament hall, you're a chump. Who knows?
Yeah. You're like, if you're not playing Fisher 960, like, you're not playing real chess.
Exactly. Who knows? I forgot about that. That is, for some people, that is definitely real chess, right?
I mean, there's no opening. Yeah, for the best players in the world, they're playing that tournament right now.
Oh, it's fascinating.
That's the real chess.
It'd be terrifying if that became the normal chess. It's like, wait, what? I don't get any opening theory.
No.
What? Chessable. Come on.
Yeah, I think that chess.com is big enough to put the kibosh on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. That would be interesting. Okay, so let's see. We got a lot going on here. Your initial rating is like around 11, 1200 rapid. So it's that's pretty good, it feels like to me, for an initial rating. Are you at a stage where you're dropping a lot of pieces? What does play look like around that level?
Yeah, I feel like it is pretty accurate into the middle game. And
Okay.
then there's like two things happen. Either there's like a complicated two or three move tactic where I'm dropping pieces, or my opponent is dropping pieces, because I'm starting to do a little bit of tactics, some puzzles and some tactics study. Or there's time pressure, or it's two people who have no idea how to play an end game, like just
Ah,
randomly moving kings and pawns
right. Okay.
until somebody wins.
Gotcha. So pretty accurate opening play. As long as it's an open middle game, pretty accurate. And then it's more
If it's a
problems.
closed middle game, I'm just like grinding my teeth and being like,
Gotcha.
what, why did I let this person play d4? I should have just aborted.
I should have just supported. Wow. Yeah, it's funny because I'm trying to pick up the Slav right now, and my blitz rating is lower than my rapid rating. And at my blitz rating, no one plays d4. Not a single person. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, because
So
you
I've
don't have
played like
time.
1,000 Karo Khan games trying to get one Slav in, and it just is not happening. So I don't really know what to do. But I was watching Alex Bonzea, I think that's how you say his name, on
That
YouTube.
sounds,
And he's got one of these climbing the ladders with the Slav. And it's so interesting because the way you described, that's kind of how his middle games are as well, where it's like almost all those games, like he was playing against 2000s, all of them were little tactics. Like just a basic two move tactic. He'd be like, oh, he missed that. And it's like, boom, game's over. And just like, what? Still at 2000? It's just like little two movers and everything.
And often tied to a pawn break, right? So I did, I was kind of doing books. I was playing a little bit more. My wife was is busier than I am, and she's more into, doing puzzles on the bus. And so she but there was, sort of in the spring of last year, I started. There would be like I would put our daughter to bed, and she'd be watching something on her phone or on her computer, and it was like this chess screen with like this dude's head in the corner, and I'm like, are you like watching other people play chess? She's like, not only that, I'm watching recorded videos of other people who have previously played chess.
Nice.
And not only that, but it is a grandmaster pretending to be bad and crushing like 1200s, and I'm like, what is it? She's like, it's this guy from San Francisco, Daniel Naroditsky.
Oh, that's
And
cool.
I was like, all right, you're gonna do you. I'm gonna go back and read my system some more. But eventually, we kind of were trying to find also ways to like enjoy chess together. So one night we played a game of chess, and we
Oh.
were like, let's never do that again,
Uh-oh.
as two competitive people who are not very good at chess. And also in a decades-long relationship, sitting down to a chessboard neither of us thought it was very edifying. So but we did start watching Naroditsky videos together on the laptop, just kind of like, cozy in bed,
Nice.
watching him destroy some 1200 playing the Accelerated Dragon, which kind of led
Whoa.
me. So he plays the Accelerated, which is like a little slower than the Hyper Accelerated, but he's gonna do him. But yeah, often transposes. So I had some ideas of how to play that already.
That's cool.
We started also doing the other fun thing we would do was one of the other games that showed up was Fischer's My 60 Greatest Games.
Oh, yeah.
And so we would, put our daughter to bed, make a couple cocktails, and bring out our nice House of Staunton set
Wow.
and play through the game and talk about like
That's
why
cool.
what is, you know, what is Fischer doing in this game, and learned to appreciate Mikhail Tal from that book of like
Oh, okay.
Fischer's annotations of like his games with Tal and how he writes about Tal. It's like, oh yeah, this guy's the guy that is the cool dude back then.
That's cool. Wow, that sounds really fun. Having a partner in your life that you can spend so much time doing chess with. I'm a little sad. I was really hoping you were going to say, and I stuck to exclusively books, and my wife does mostly videos, and then we could do this experiment of like who picks up chess faster. but you know, that's okay. You ruined
Yeah.
the
No, I got into videos. I mean, I mostly watch Nerdist's speed runs,
experience.
and yeah, they're great. It's a great thing to do when you're like folding laundry. It's like, you know, it's the opposite of sweat work. It's kind of like just something. It's chess entertainment. But you learn a little bit. I think it's very instructive too.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like he does a good job of leaving you with ideas that percolate.
Yeah, and he tries to like hammer home one or two ideas a game. And you know, even this week I was watching it one, and I was like, oh yeah, that. I realized I was like, oh yeah, C4, F4, like those are the, you know, from a, you know, just a an activity standpoint, like those are the best squares to start your bishops on. Because I had a game this week at the club where I played Bishop G5 when I should have played Bishop F4, and like I was better out of the opening, and that was like the start of the end. And so this week Nerdiski was like, well, you know, like objectively, like the position being equal, like those are the best squares for your bishops to start on. And I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense, because bishop c4 is like such a great move, so why wouldn't bishop f4 also be a great move for your dark squared bishop?
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, so that's cool. So we're getting some videos. I have to ask, in this period, is your wife playing online, or is she mostly taking in material?
She's mostly taking in material, but she does, true to her form, she does beat me to the punch of being like, hey, there's this thing called the Chess Dojo. And I was like,
Ooh,
oh, I've heard
okay.
about this. And that's sort of like the end of last spring. And she's like, I think I'm gonna join it. And so she joined, and then a little, you know, a couple, she's like, you should join this too. Sounds like what you would like. And so a couple of weeks later, I did that. We both joined the training program.
That's
And she
cool.
started playing some more long games as
Nice.
per the advice of the Chess Dojo. But she's not as, you know, I'm more active on Discord, so I started chatting with other people on Discord, and so that was around the time where I got the sense of, like, beyond just my household, like the sense of chess community.
Gotcha.
So that's around the time I joined the Chess Dojo,
Okay.
and I also started playing OTP.
So, did you join the chess dojo for the community, or because you were looking for some sort of structure to what seems like to now has been a very haphazard training program?
Yeah, definitely the purpose was the latter, was for the structure and the kind of the plan and the training plan. And like was pleasantly surprised to also get the former.
Okay.
And it took me a while to realize that community piece. In fact, like, you know, just, you know, a couple, what is it, a couple months ago, reading Ben Johnson's book and him putting community as one of like the four pillars of chess improvement.
Yeah.
At first I was like, oh, that's that doesn't seem to that, you know, which one of these things doesn't quite belong? I was like, you know, tactics, playing games, analyzing games,
Right.
and community kind of seems like the odd duck. But the more I thought about it, I'm like, oh yeah, that is actually like a so playing a OTB at a club and playing games with and sparring with and just discussing, like talking chess on the Chess Dojo Discord was like a big step forward for me.
Nice. Okay. And do you use the dojo to like spar and things like that? Or is it more like this is the book that I need to read now?
Yeah, I started doing the book. I did your daughter's favorite, everyone's first chess workbook, the
Okay.
Peter Giannatis book, which is the best.
Yep.
We bought one copy. My wife went all the way through it first
Oh,
without writing
nice.
in her answers. I went all the way through it second without writing through my answers. And now our 4-year-old is going through it. We just hit chapter 4, pins. She's very, she gets really excited when she reaches the end of a chapter. And I'm like, and there's another new concept coming up. She's like, let's burn through the last couple of pages of forks so we can get to pins. So
Oh, that's neat. Okay.
yeah. And she's actually doing it where she writes in her notation. So
Yep, that's what my daughter's doing. The book
yeah.
is now ruined as she has written in all of her answers.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's all right. I support her in whatever's going to motivate her is fine with me.
Yeah, exactly. It's like whatever you find cool, like go for it.
Yeah.
So I love that book. I did that book. I think I started out in the 700 to 800 cohort on Chess Dojo. I find the, you know, the chess I joined right around the time of 2.0, when they started having like a much better scoreboard where you could click off your tasks and measure your progress against people in your cohort. And yeah, that was very, as a type A person, I was like, give me all the boxes to check. Like, how many gold stars can I get?
Yeah, I want more gold stars than you. I
So,
just graduated, just, I don't
yeah,
mean
I
to.
saw that. I didn't watch. Did you watch the graduation video? Did Jesse go through your game?
I didn't even know there was
Well, let me
graduation.
see. I haven't. I like to. That's my the only thing I watch them do on Twitch is usually when it's my games, but occasionally when it's just to see other people's games. So he does do that. So let me see if I'll find it and I'll email it to you if
Interesting.
there's a.
I graduated recently, and then I just graduated again like yesterday.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, because
Are you
my rating,
crushing your weekly tournament? Is that the thing?
it temporarily went up
To
and then it's gone back
2100, Kevin. That
down.
congratulations. That's amazing.
So technically I should probably ungraduate myself, but I think I'm gonna let it go and
Wait,
just
so what's your live rating today?
my live rating is like 1750.
Yeah, there you go.
It was 1780. So
Okay.
yeah.
Nicely done.
Oh well, what are you gonna do? All right. Well, I'm curious, what got you to tournaments then? So you said you joined the dojo to get some structure, and then very soon after that, suddenly you're playing OTB. Is this like casual OTB at like a park with friends? Is this like rated
It
tournaments?
is not. These are U.S. Chess
Okay.
Federation rated tournaments at America's oldest continually operating chess club. So there's this really cool place. Like I said, my wife went and took some lessons when she first started at this place called the Mechanics Institute. And the mechanic, I already knew about the Mechanics Institute from writers that I know in San Francisco. It's this cool old library that's been in the same building in down in the financial district in downtown San Francisco since like 1850. And their chess club was founded in 1854. And my wife was like, it's like a really cool old building. This it's on the up on the fourth floor. They have this chess room. She says, like, the joke is like it's open, they have tournaments on the weekends, but it's open during the day. And the joke is like, if you want to play chess, you show up and there's these just a bunch of these old dudes that are kind of sitting around, and as you poke your head in, someone will be like, want to play chess? But yeah, so I was like, oh, I'm gonna go see what it's like. I signed up for a tournament and I was like, yes, I am in on this. I lost all my games and I was like, this, what a beautiful setting to lose all of my games and have a
That's awesome.
terrible rating. So
Okay.
yeah, so I started going to the mechanics.
Okay, so did you do anything to prep for that tournament? Like, I know people get really nervous for their first tournament, or did you just be like, this is the next step, I'm just going to go do this tournament?
I listen to podcasts where people give advice to people who are going to their
Oh
first
my
tournament.
goodness.
Yeah,
Good idea.
I think maybe you had some with Omar. I listened to
Yeah.
like Daniel Lona's podcast, some of Ben Johnson episodes about prepping for tournaments, anything I could find.
Nice.
I made sure I had some snacks. I
Okay.
tried to practice with like the clock, because
Ooh.
we had purchased a chess clock.
Wow.
Yeah, I was not prepared. I was very nervous,
Yeah.
like
Hardest part.
to the point that I'm literally like physically shaking at the board.
Yeah.
And the other thing was I signed up for it. So I've been playing like 15-10 games mostly, online, and I signed up for a quad that was game in 30 with a 5 second delay.
Okay.
And so fool me is like, oh, that's such luxurious long time control. So I started doing a thing which I had never done before, which I was like, I'm gonna really think about this because this is serious chess. So the guy plays e4 and I'm gonna play c6, but let me think about like what are all the things that that move does.
Oh
And then
boy.
I'm like, oh, and d5, notice the diagonals that are open. I'm like, clearly like a bad clearly you know 8 moves into the game, I've got like I'm through half my time and I'm like panicking. So I flagged twice in that game. I was also unrated, but they do this thing where they like filter in the unrated peoples through various quads. So my quad was three people who were 1,000 USCF. And two of those people are now 1,400.
Oh, wow.
It was a good quad. And even then, my first game against this girl who's now 1,400, who actually like won a prize in the under 1,300 or under 1,500 section at the North American Open
Oh, wow.
this year. I played a Caro-Kann and we actually got into a position where I flagged in a theoretical draw where it
Ooh.
was like, it was king, pawn versus king. I had blockaded the pawn, and all I had to do was go forward and back.
Yeah.
But A, I didn't know enough to know how to draw that game.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably could have figured it out, but B, I also didn't have any time on my clock. So the other thing I did was I let my opponent think on my time because I would forget to hit the clock.
Yep, that's hard.
And I did actually a third thing that was very stupid too, which was I had this idea that had been instilled to me by the senseis in the dojo, which is like the most important thing of going to your first tournament is like, how you then you have the record of this game. And so with US Chess Federation rules, when you're under 5 minutes, you can stop keeping score. I did not stop keeping score because I was like, more important than winning is right, isn't like, recording these moves for posterity, which was stupid because the other person is like doing it, or like I'm not, I'm not trying to win. I'm trying to like use my time to write moves, which is stupid. So yeah, so I flagged two games and then I lost the third one to a tactic.
Yeah, that's tough. I still struggle with that because I play these game 55s and I write my moves down until I'm down to like 40 seconds and then I have to finally stop. And it was really annoying after the last game. My opponent, I had 13 seconds and he had 38 minutes and the game ends and he goes, "Hey, can I see your scorebook? I stopped writing the moves down." And I was
Yeah,
like,
the nerve.
"What?" And then he
So
goes, "It looks like you missed some moves." And I was like, "You mean when I had 13 seconds left? Yeah, I did miss a few moves."
there's a nice thing that happened. So I've been playing. So that was I played a quad tournament. I then I played a month later I played like a Saturday Swiss tournament, and then I play and then I started playing the Tuesday night tournament, which is game in 120
Whoa,
delay five.
wow.
But the cool thing about that is that those are also FIDE rated games, and so the rule in FIDE rated games is that even if your opponent is under 5 minutes, if you are not under 5 minutes, you have to continue keeping score.
Oh, nice.
So in those games, I can rely on the opponent who has more time to keep a record of me scrambling under time pressure to flag an endgame.
Okay, that's cool. So it sounds like you got pretty serious pretty quick. Are you playing a lot of these Mechanics Institute tournaments?
I just this month passed out of my provisional rating. So I've played my 26th game. So I guess like that's over the span of like 8 months. I've played 26 games. So what is that like 40 games a year
Okay,
pace?
that's quite a bit.
Yeah, I like to. I mean, I'd like to, and I would probably do it a little bit more if I we didn't have a 4-year-old. And we moved in San Francisco in December, slightly further from the chess club, which is
That was a mistake.
just far. Yeah, I know, right? So just far enough where like the handoff of my wife getting home from work and me being able to leave to get to the club, it's like the commute is only like 10 minutes more, but those 20 minutes mean that it's like hard for me to get to the Tuesday night game. So I'm playing it right now, but it, like,
Okay.
no.
And you're looking for a new place.
Yeah, or I could, or I'm trying to convince the Mechanics Institute, who's been there since 1850, to like maybe move your building closer to me.
That seems reasonable. I'm sure they love
Yeah.
for you. So you lost your first three games. What brought you back? Like, why didn't you just go like, maybe this isn't for me?
Yeah, I wanted to come lose some more games, so I did another tournament where I lost all my games. And that one was worse because that one I actually like played well, but at the end and lost games. One of them was in like a two piece up end game, missing a mate in two and hanging a queen to a 7-year-old. Yeah, so that was a low point. Flagging in a rook up Ruy Lopez end game. So yeah, I still had some problems at the board, and then I st and then so after that I was like, I need to play slower games. Actually, everybody at the Mechanics was like, you need to play slower games, dude. Like you're gonna be people will be scared of you once you get 120 minutes on your clock. So then I joined the Tuesday night tournament. In the first round, I played this guy who just kind of squeezed me and crushed me in a Caro-Kann, and then after we were in the we went to the Skittles room, and I was like, so he played the advance, I played the C5 Botvinnik, and then he played B4, and I was like, that move looks wrong, but I don't know why. Or maybe he took the pawn first and then played b4 to reinforce his pawn on c5. I think that's what he did. So he took c5, I played e6, right tick, opened the attack on the bishop, and then he played b4 to reinforce the pawn. And I was like, that looks wrong, but I don't know. I looked at it for a while. I was like, I just don't understand. The move is a5. If anyone ever does that to you. So after we were talking in the game, and I was like, where did you come up with that move before? He was like, oh, it's one of the recommendations of this thing, the Chess Dojo. Have you heard of it? And I was like, yeah, I also am in the Chess Dojo. So that's when that was my first chess friend, my friend Dominic.
That's cool.
Yeah, so we started like kind of prepping together because, the fun thing about the Tuesday night game is you get your pairing a day before. They publish all the games, so you kind of have a sense of what your opponent plays. And so we started like helping each other to kind of prep, and then we started like you have it. We've done a couple of times where we like met up at a bar with like his travel set to kind of and a clock to kind of spar some games. We actually did that this week. I've been on a streak of like playing really well against like 1400s and 1500s and getting into end games and then losing end games because I still don't know how to do those. And so we went to a bar this week. And just sparred the dojo end game positions like OTB with beers, and it was great. So Ben Johnson is right. Like chess community is like kind of an important thing. So
Have you thought about, I know this is a wild idea, studying endgames at all?
yeah, this is a complicated one, and this goes back to like it's not I'm not at the level, same thing with openings, right? I'm not at the level where the dojo thinks I should be learning too much about openings and end games. They're like, you just do just study tactics, analyze your games, and you'll get it. And I feel like that I ask myself that same question, Kevin, which is like, would it be okay if I learned a little bit more about end games? And I think what I realized is like, the recommendations at our level are like what you do to learn end games is you spar end games.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so that's why I finally started doing that because it's hard to set up the sparring online. One thing I will say about OTB chess is it really ruined online chess for me, especially the idea of like playing slow games online. I'm like, I'm for sure never playing a classical game sitting at my computer. Like the best part of my day is like when I'm, 5 minutes before the round starts and I shut off my phone and I take off my watch and I put them in my game and I put them in my bag and I'm like, this is what I love.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I used to play 45-45s every Tuesday night, and it was awesome on Lee Chess.
Yeah, in the 45 league.
I wasn't even in a league. I
No,
was
you
just
just
playing
would
with
play a
people.
game, yeah.
Yeah, I would like set up scrimmages. And then once I started playing over the board every Wednesday, I was like, this is like a billion times better. And
Yeah.
now when I try to play the 45-45s, when an email comes in, I'm like, I should check that. Whereas before, since it was my only thing, I would close every window and I wouldn't get distracted. And now I just can't help it. I'm always distracted when I'm playing.
Well, that's the thing about playing the game on your machine that has all the other stuff. This is why there's a common thing about writers who have a laptop specifically for writing, where the only solution to not getting distracted is they have to actually remove the hardware that causes it to connect to the internet.
That's a cute
Yeah.
idea.
It's a cute idea, but it's also kind of sad too.
Yeah, it
It's
really
like that's
is.
why typewriters were great. Because
Yeah, let's bring him back.
you couldn't check your email on a
Bring
typewriter,
back the
but
typewriter.
they also got jammed all the time. So
Yeah, that's true. That's kind of bad. Okay, so it seems like I'm looking at your ratings results here, and it seems like you're doing fine. You're hanging out around the 400 mark for a
yeah,
while.
I was in the 200s. Let's not sugarcoat this. I got down to the 200s.
But then things jump up. Like what changed there, do you think, that allowed you to gain like 200 points one tournament, 200 points the next tournament?
Yeah, I think part of it was just the notion of low expectations on behalf of the U.S. Chess Federation algorithm. They're like, you're 200, so like if you can beat a 700, like you're suddenly a chess god among 200s. But no, I just got more comfortable playing at the board. I was learning, I was doing tactics work. At this point, I'm starting to do like, I'm doing the Polgar Mates. I'm also doing another one of your daughter's favorite books, the Susan Polgar book 3, The Defensive Techniques.
Yeah, that one's
So
really
I
good.
think there was like, there's just kind of steps in your chess understanding. You're like, okay, my brain kind of like can autopilot this level of chess. So now I can start to use my thinking power on this next level. And really kind of thinking about like recognizing my opponent's ideas and my opponent's threats. And the other thing was like developing a thought process, which I find is something that I think is like under prescribed and under appreciated by people teaching chess, even by the dojo, right? It's like, I feel like there's not a good recognition of the fact that it's actually hard to figure out what a thinking process is. Like, what should you think about on your turn? And how do you actually like have a structure to make sure that you're doing it the same way every time? So I got this book for my wife for my birthday, by Dan Heisman. It's called The Improving Chess Thinker. And that book helped me a lot.
I thought for sure you were gonna say it was like Kotov's Think Like a Grandmaster or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, oh no.
Yeah. No.
Got my system. No,
this is a pretty simple book, and it's this book where he goes through there's this thing, the De Groot exercise, where Dan Heisman's been doing these for years, where he records his students at different levels, and he's like, he gives them a position and he's like, talk me through what you would think about if you had this at the board.
Yeah.
And so you read, and he, you know, he goes through like the lowest, you know, goes through by class. And so you read the class, whatever the lowest class, class F, and they explain what they're thinking. And you're like, wow, you're not thinking about much at all. And he's like, all right, so here's a couple things that these people are not doing. First of all, they're not counting the material. Secondly, they're not looking at checks, captures, and threats.
Yeah.
And so part of that book is going through players' thought processes. I think maybe like the amateur's mind is a little bit of a similar thing, but he also has a section where he writes his advice on what you should be like. This is his version of like a good thought process in chess. And so in my same little notebook, I kind of started to actually write out like, what am I going to think about on my move?
Nice.
And before I would go down to the club for my, I used to walk to the club for my Tuesday night games. I would read through that, like, you know, 15 minutes before I got to the club, I would stop and sit on a bench. That was part of my like routine for arriving at the board, is read through like, what is my thought process tonight? Like, what am I going to think about on each move? And that helped me a lot.
I like that. And what did you come up with? What is their thought process?
So the first thing is to look at the first thing is you look at your opponent's move and you think about all the things that that move does. And all the
Wait,
things.
But what if you have a plan that you really like? And
yeah,
just...
right. So this is the brilliance of having a thought process is that part of your brain, and you're just like, quiet. You'll have your turn. So yeah, you think about what does your opponent's move do, and what does it no longer do? Like, what does it no longer guard? What are all the reasons for the opponent making that move?
Nice.
And then the second one is you start to form a list of candidate moves, and you start with your forcing moves, your checks, captures, and threats. You give those each a very quick run through to see if they fail to a forcing reply by your opponent, and then you can discard those moves. If you don't have anything useful in any of those three categories, then you can start to look for something more like intuitive or positional, and then you're thinking about like, what is my plan? Or how can I stop my opponent's plan? Then you kind of rank your candidate moves from most to least likely.
Nice.
Figure out how much time you want to lose on your move. Use on your move, because I'm a terrible time manager.
Okay.
And then you kind of go through the moves one by one, and keeping track of like the evaluating the position that results in having kind of like king of the hill move of like, okay, move A is good. Move B, is it better or worse than move A? If
nice.
It's better, then that's now my best move.
Yep.
If it's not as good, then move A is still my best move. And then by the time you either go through all your moves or you've used enough time, you play your best move. You check it once. You do a safety check. You make the move. You hit your clock. You write it down. So that's my
nice. So it sounds like you're doing something where you're evaluating each move. My guess is you're doing it more of a relative evaluation instead of like a Stockfish. Like, I think this is -2 and this one is only -1.2.
Yeah, it's not which position, what's the objective evaluation of this position? It's like, which position do I like better?
Yeah. I would love to get to a point. That's more what I do. And I hear like higher level players being like, I have a running Stockfish evaluation going, and then I evaluate each position sort of like based on that. Like, it's 1.2 now. If I play this, I think it's more like 1.8. I'm like, wow, I'm more just like the position is better than it was before.
Yeah, because I think there's this idea of like if you think you are plus three and then you go through your candidate moves and you think your best candidate move is plus one,
Yeah.
then you're like, well, I have one of two problems. Either my evaluation of the position going into this is wrong, or I'm missing something.
Yeah.
And you probably check the second one first. Like, am I missing something? Why do if I think I'm better, like why can't I find a better move?
Yeah, and
There should be
that's
one.
one of my biggest problems is over-evaluating my position. Like my coach and I have these constant discussions where I'll be like, and I look at the position now and I'm winning. And he's like, well, like if you mean winning by like plus 0.3, then sure, but you're not winning. And that's making you have all these problems because now you're looking
Yeah.
for a winning move instead of just a move that slightly improves an already slightly better position.
Yeah, your approach and your goals for this move are not matching the actual like position on the board.
Yeah, I think for
You're
myself, it's a big area for
trying to
change.
find a winning move in a position that's equal, where you just need to find a move that
Yeah.
maintains equality instead of looking for a move that crushes. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so it sounds like you've got a thinking pattern now. You're working on your tactics.
I'm working on it. Yeah,
You're in the
it's
chess
not perfect, but
dojo.
yeah, I'm in the dojo.
You got it all going on. You're going to tournaments, and
Yeah,
you
when I can get.
decided to fly out to Vegas. What made you think like it's time to go big?
So yeah, I kind of so all the tournaments, all the games I'm playing are at Mechanics, and it's great, but it is, and you're playing on these old wooden boards that are like have been there for more than 100 years. Like they supply the clocks and the pieces. There's all these old chess photos on the wall. Like I was playing my game this week and I would look right next to me and I'm like, oh, there's a picture of Smyslov doing like a simul smoking a cigarette like at this table that I'm
Yeah,
sitting at right now.
that's
And
amazing.
but I'm kind of interested in these bigger tournaments, but then I also I'm a little bit spoiled by Mechanics. So it's
Yeah.
the kind of CCA tournament of like you got to bring your own pieces. I'm like, really? But I was kind of like, what would that be like? And so I kind of had seen, oh, there's this period between Christmas and New Year's. And then my wife was like, oh, I'm gonna go to on this me we both do kind of like silent meditation retreats, which I think is also helpful to my chess.
Yeah.
It's a thing I do before the game is I kind of this is like Vidit Guthrashi does this as well. So like I do a meditation. So but so she says, so I'm going to a meditation retreat right after New Year's, and my dad is gonna come stay with us to kind of lend a hand with the childcare. And I was like, well, if you're already going and doing that and he's already coming, maybe I could go to this chess tournament between Christmas and New Year's.
Nice.
And I hadn't been to Las Vegas in probably 10 years. But I wanted to go play, and I had a great time.
Nice.
It was awesome.
Seems like you did pretty well, but it looks like you gained 200 and some points. Like, that's pretty great.
Yeah, I feel like that was a big thing too, of like I finally felt ready to like go out and play my best chess.
Nice.
And I had a really good tournament. In fact, I had like that the last round game I was on like 4 out of 6, and
Wow.
I was like playing to get to 5, which I thought would like probably win me a prize, which I've for sure never won in chess. So yeah, and there were some ups and downs at that tournament, and but yeah, just like I really liked the tournament in Vegas too, of like being in the hotel, just like going between my room and the playing hall. I loved going to see, looking up on the list and seeing people like, I would go and watch your games, or I'd go check in on, I check would check in on Forrest, Young Forrest's games to be like, who is this guy whose voice I've heard on
Yeah.
Kevin's podcast? And there were some guys from Mechanics that were there. There's some guys from the dojo that were there. And I actually got, there was like some higher, a couple, like two higher ranked guys, in the dojo that were like they would go over my games with me after every round. I was like, this is amazing.
That's great.
So yeah, it really felt like being in like that like just chess incubator of like everybody is
Yeah.
here, and the playing hall is so cool too. Just
Yeah.
that the big ballroom at the Horseshoe with like 500 boards. I was always on board 412 in this round. But it is very you know, motivating and aspirational to look at the people who are, you know, on board even in like the 200s and be like, I would like to be there in a couple of years. I have kind of a chess goal. I know you like all like to always hear people's chess goals, but this is one that I think about from that tournament, which is one of my chess goals is to maintain a higher rating than my daughter for as long as I can.
Good luck.
Yeah, I know, right? So I'm like, at some point, I figure we'll probably both be around like maybe, you know, the 1600 point where she passes me. So I'm like, how old will I be, and how old will she be when we're both kind of like sitting at board like 260, just kind of getting each other daggers. I'm like, who's gonna
that
get
would
more
be
points?
Fun, the tournament where you get paired and it's like beginning of her meteoric rise.
Yeah,
and then
that's where I unload the dagger of like, I've been teaching you the Sicilian all wrong just for this moment.
Yeah, I didn't teach you this one move. That's cool.
How was your tournament? What did you think? Because you've been to Vegas before. You played this tournament before, right?
Yeah, I love the Vegas tournaments. Yeah. I don't know why. This was probably my best tournament ever, I think.
Yeah.
I played in an under 1900 section. I played all 1800s. I was like, I drew 3-1-2, only lost one game the whole weekend. Like, I was just like, this is great. If I could do this every time, I think I drew 4 games. A lot of the draws too were games where it was like, wow, I really should have won that one. So it was one of those tournaments where it's just like, I was on the winning side of almost every single game. And even the game I lost, it was like, I knew why I lost. It was a problem I've been trying to eradicate, and it popped up and I got to learn a lesson. And I was like, okay, I learned from the loss. The wins, and it was just so great.
And what do you like? So, what were you doing between rounds? Were you? I'm assuming you were staying at the Horseshoe, and you were just going back to your room to prep. Were you like catching up with people that you had interviewed on the podcast before, like meeting friends, or like what's your?
So the funny thing is, I didn't really know anyone there.
Oh, okay.
I had one friend there who was there with his wife and hanging out with her a lot, which was cool. We caught up a little bit. So I did spend a lot of time just kind of hanging out in the room. I didn't spend too much time prepping. Like, I don't prep for opponents. Like, when I find out my opponent 30 minutes before the round, I'm just like, whatever. I don't care. I'm not even going to look up their name. That's irrelevant to me.
You know what? One thing I will say that I love about the CCA, when they send you the text of what board you're on and it doesn't have the rating. Because I play Zen mode on Lee Chess. I don't want to know my opponent's rating. I don't want them to chat me. So I like that's that cool. I was able to play, which I can't do at Mechanics because I know everybody's rating at Mechanics because I know them all. But it was great at in Vegas to just show up at the board and be like, you're 8, and like your rating is somewhere under 1,000.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
Like, I'm just gonna play good moves.
Yeah. So what I do is when I get that, I immediately look them up to see their rating.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't try to research them as a player. I just want to know what is realistic for me, right? Is this person 1900? If they are, you know, that's going to be a bigger struggle for me, and I need to be thinking going in, understanding that. If they're like 1700, you know, I have a different understanding, which it's kind of pointless though, because ratings are so inaccurate.
Yeah,
right now
I guess
anyway.
The other thing is you put their rating into the ratings calculator and test it. Like, if I get 0 on this game,
I don't
if
do
I
that.
Get 0.5, if I get 1.0, okay, yeah,
I used
that's
to do
good.
That.
That's
was
good.
my obsession, and I'm
Kevin. You're growing
to...
as a person. Look at that.
Yeah, the last round I did do that because I was.
Yeah,
trying
I
to
did that
figure
on the
out,
last round too,
and I hit 1800, and I could have if
have.
I had won, but I.
Yeah,
I
yeah, I would hit. I would have hit 900 in that last round if I had won,
yeah.
and I had a better position, and I learned a lot from that game. How not to simplify.
Oh, okay. Before we wrap up though, I do want to ask about your daughter. So is she 4 now? Is that what you said?
She's 4 now. Yeah. She just turned 4.5, which is still, I think it's like, I feel like that's the last big half birthday. So she just turned 4.5.
And where is she at in her chess?
Where is she at? She is.
She and I am yet.
No, she's a candidate women's IM.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good.
She is, no, she really likes chess. She really likes to hear about my games.
Okay.
So when I'm going down to the club, we have a chess song that we listen to in the
Ooh,
car on chess days,
that's
which
awesome.
she actually decided that this was going to be our chess song. It's Tom Petty's "I Won't Back Down." She's a
Oh, such
big
a
Tom Petty fan.
perfect chess.
Yeah, and she's like, "Dada, this is a great song. You got to stand up to those guys." So
That's
we listen to that, and she likes to hear about my game. She actually likes to play through my games.
Oh,
She'll say, "Dada, if you won, I'll play as you, but if you
okay.
lost, you can play as the guy that beat you so that you can feel good about the checkmate."
That's funny.
She's going through the we're going through we started out going through the well, first we started playing just pawns. We called it sharks and minnows. It's just
Oh,
like
okay.
eight pawns against eight pawns, and like see how we can whether someone can promote. We slowly added a piece at a time until she
Okay.
was playing what she called the real game.
Okay.
We started to do the everyone's first chess workbook, and where she learned the names of the squares, learned how to take free pieces, learned how to checkmate,
Nice.
battery checkmate, back rank check. She loves back rank checkmates. Boy,
Ooh,
oh
who doesn't?
boy. Yeah, her chess.com puzzle rush, which once she gets on that, is going to be outrageous. So about a month ago, I did start. She doesn't really do anything on an iPad other than watch it on an airplane, but I did make the big step of introducing Chess Kid on the
Oh,
iPad,
yeah.
which she really likes. She played a couple games against other kids and didn't really like that.
Okay.
But she likes to do puzzles. She
Okay.
likes to do the lessons. So they actually have like these lessons on Chess Kid that she goes through. But she keeps going back to this like very first one, and she likes to do it, which is basically like how the pieces move. And so the way it works is like there's the board. They give you a piece and they give you a star on another square, and they're like, move your bishop however many times you need to until you can capture that star.
Oh, okay.
And there was a moment last week where I was like, oh, this is the first sign of like your brain is going to be better at chess than my brain, which is I was watching her do this. And all of the pieces, you have to move a couple times. And then she gets to the section where there's like 10 knight puzzles in a row where the knight has to go capture that star.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of tricky. I've heard from
Oh,
people
yeah.
that like that's the hardest thing to teach kids is like how the knight moves.
Yep.
And even for me playing at the board, I like have to literally like count and be
Yep,
like,
me
okay,
too.
there and there and there. And
Yep.
I watched her do it, Kevin, and she just like blitzed out the most efficient route
Oh,
every
wow.
time. And I was like, my brain for sure cannot do that.
Yeah,
Like,
mine
how
can't
are you? Yeah, it was definitely kind of like a Neo Matrix moment where I'm
either.
like, man, your vision for like how this knight needs to route to get to that star is like, wow. So
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on your daughter in chess? Is your goal to like have her be the world champion? Is your goal to have her do whatever she wants? Like what are your plans with her?
if she wants to be the world champion, she can. I won't stop her. But yeah, I
Your
mean, it's just like
jealousy
I just
won't stop her.
yeah, I think that I mean, I certainly won't stop her with my play. Like if we're in the candidates tournament together, like she's winning the candidates, not me.
Gotcha. Okay.
No, I mean, I just want her to have fun, and to like it, right? Like, I think that she's competitive when we play board games, and she is like my wife and I. We made her, so like she has us in her. So
Yeah.
but yeah, I wanted to, together we're like, let's try and keep her enjoying the game. So there's actually like a
Nice.
big San Francisco, the Mechanics runs a big San Francisco wide free Scholastic tournament in March every year. And it's at this beautiful big hall in Golden Gate Park, and there's like 300 kids, and you have to be kindergarten age to play. And I was like, well, we could probably sneak her in, but she's not that interested in playing other kids yet. So
Yeah.
I was like, there's this chess tournament, and she's really excited about. She's told me a lot of times, like when I go to a chess tournament, it's like I want to go to a chess tournament too.
That's funny.
But I was like, hey, there's a chess tournament coming up for kids. You don't need to play in it. And she's like, I don't think I want to play in it. And I was like, we could just go watch
That's a good
the
idea.
tournament. And she was like, yeah, let's go watch the tournament. So we're gonna just like show up and just watch it. And I feel like that
That's
she'll either be like, This is what I thought I wanted to do. No, hard pass.
Yeah.
Or, probably more likely she'll be like, I think I would like to do this next year. So.
Yeah, probably also this is just like what happened with my daughter when she sees some other little girls in the tournament playing, she'll
Yeah.
probably gravitate towards their games and how they're doing. Maybe, who knows, she'll even talk to them and make a chess friend. Like that was a really big part of my daughter's journeys when she
Yeah,
made
and
her first really good chess friend.
that's the Ben Johnson community thing, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, is there did you do you feel like there was a reason why your older daughter like didn't get hooked in the way that your younger daughter did?
Yes, I think I learned from my older child. So my older child is incredibly competitive. So much is unbelievable, kind of like I am.
Yeah.
And I really tried to, with chess especially, be like, that doesn't really work in chess. I'm gonna lose a lot of games in chess. I have to deal with that. But for my older child, it went from like trading bishops. She was like, you can't have my bishop. And I was like, yeah, but you're gonna take mine back. And she's like, no, we're not doing
No.
that. And I was like, okay, interesting. And so we tried to kind of work around it, but she just never really accepted that was a part of the game. And then with
Yeah.
my other child, because I remembered that experience, I did this whole thing where when I taught her, we would actually stop when we would trade pieces, and it wasn't a bad thing. They went to the playground, and then we would actually.
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember the playground. You
Right.
talked
And
about
so
this.
it was a whole different mentality of teaching in it. And had I known that with my older child, who knows what would have happened, but it just wasn't something that she dug because of that.
Yeah, I would, as I said, like my wife and I tried playing, wasn't right for us, but it would be fun if, she got to a level where like I don't know where I like when you talk about how you play like time odds with your daughter.
Oh yeah.
Do you do that more than like piece odds? You find time odds is a better.
I don't like doing piece odds.
It's just weird to look at the
Yeah.
board and there's
I feel
like.
like it doesn't help either of us actually get better at chess. Maybe I'm wrong. Feels more like a parlor trick of like.
Yeah, I think the time odds do, as somebody who has time trouble and
Yeah.
has to play, blitz out end games, I think it could be useful to me to like,
Yeah, I mean it's really hard too. Like if you go low enough, like your child has an advantage. Like it's very challenging to just be able to snap a finger and move a piece. Like I'm great at doing it 99% of the time, but it's the 1% where she'll sneak in a checkmate that I'm not ready for because it's like I got distracted just ever so slightly for a millisecond.
So my daughter and I do play games where I print out the USCF score sheet and we write out our moves. And we
Oh,
usually
that's
get to about like 25 moves by the time she's
nice.
able to checkmate me. And we kind of say, I kind of do things of like, okay, look, like, can you see, like, look at the position, like check your checks. Do you have any
Yeah.
batteries? Do I have any pieces undefended?
That's cool.
The only other person that she's played chess with, other than two kids on Chess Kid, is she played my dad. So my parents were in town. I mentioned this before. My parents were in town and I wanted to go to a Saturday tournament to play in like a quad. And
Yeah.
so, and my wife was out of town. And so I was like, hey, can I leave my kid with you for, I'm going to go play this tournament. And they're like, yeah. So they hung out at home and I was like, oh, dad, you can play chess with Beatrix if you want. And I came home and I was like, how'd it go? And my daughter was like, oh, we played chess. My dad was like, well, we didn't finish the game. I was like, oh, she lost interest. And he was like, yeah, we were playing for a while. And then I took her pawn with my bishop en passant. And I was like, oh, you know that that's not a rule, right? You can't just, so that's probably what happened is she, cause she had, cause she had already learned the en passant rule, by the way. She
Right.
loves saying en passant. And, she probably was just like, grandpa, that's not, how, you know what? Let's just stop playing.
Yeah, right, exactly. This is pointless at this point.
Yeah.
That sounds exactly like what my youngest child used to do. She would just yell out en passant and then do whatever she wanted. And I'm like, that is not how en passant. I realize it's a
Yeah.
confusing move.
That's another French word. That's carte blanche. You're confusing en passant with carte blanche.
Oh man. Well, Andrew, thanks so much for joining me today. This has been a really fun chat. It sounds like you're having a great journey. You're enjoying it. You're putting time in, you're improving. Like to me, I almost would be willing to switch places with you. Like in that part of the journey where you're like, I gained 200 points here, 200 points there. I'm going to gain 200 another tournament soon. So, you know, wish you all the best. I think.
Yeah. If you'd like to be 800 and I'll be 1700, well, let's just do it. Let's call up the people and see if we can just do that transfer.
Okay. Well, we'll see what we can do.
But you know what you should do? You should come up and play a tournament in San Francisco. Come up.
I want to play a
2-day weekend tournament.
Yeah, I see. Did you play in an Alto tournament?
They started doing that. The format that Peter Giannata started out in Charlotte. They had one in January. It was great.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I would definitely fly up to San Fran for an Alto tournament. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good talking to you, my friend. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks,
Kevin. People want to get in touch with you. What's the best way to do it?
They can find me on Lee Chess. My username on Lee Chess is Ambush Rock Shasa. It's a D&D Pathfinder reference. I write a Substack newsletter about the tabletop role-playing game I play. So that's my that is called Ambush Tactics. That's ambush.substack.com, where they can find out a little bit more about me. And then my handle on Lee Chess and on Discord, if you're in the chess dojo, either public or training Discord, you can find me as Ambush Rakshasa on Discord.
Okay, nice. And I'll have Andrew spell that out for me, and I'll put it in the show notes in case you're struggling with that. So that sounds awesome. Thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And for all of you out there, hopefully this is where you get to be Andrew and you just go to a tournament and get 200 points. But if it's not, and if you're losing points, oh boy, that's okay. Don't panic. Come back next week. We'll have another guest that will help you on your journey. And I'll see y'all next week, everybody. Goodbye.